Just hit all the buttons. It'll be fine.
Okay, there we go. We are recording now, so let's go ahead and call the 2019 I Am Freedom Board meeting to order. And we will start with Ethan's treasurer report.
Do we need to wait for Gary to get back to take notes?
He's back.
Oh, okay, I didn't hear that. Sorry. Yes, treasurer's report. So I cannot remember exactly what report was given at the last board meeting. I didn't check it. But I'm going to start with 2017 because there's a discrepancy here that I want to talk about. 2017, we opened the year with $29,195.82. We only have complete records through September of 2017 for reasons I will get to in a moment. In that time, we had an income of $413.24, which was $400 of donations, $10.15 of Spreadshirt, $3.09 of interest on our interest-bearing accounts. And we had expenses of $159, which was just our representation, our annual fees to our representatives, CT Corp, for the state of Delaware. So 2019, we have records starting in April. In April, we had at least $29,450.06. I don't know exactly how much. We closed the year with $29,553.22. For the time for which I have records, we had income of $268.46, of which $255 were donations, $2.73 of interest, and $10.73 from Spreadshirt. Our expenses in that period were $180.49 in banking fees. Again, we'll get to that here in a minute. 2019, we opened the year with $29,553.22. So far this year, as of the end of last month, I think, or whenever our statements came out last month, we have had an income of $1.88 in interest, and expenses have been negative $180. Now let's get to this weirdness, why we had a bunch of banking fees, why we have negative expenses this year, and why there is a discrepancy. There's missing money in our record. Not missing money. We have extra money, actually. We have in between September of 2017 and April of 2019, we had income. Hang on, I did the totals here and then I closed the window. We had income of $110.74 in our checking account and $95.33 in our savings account, for which I don't know exactly what that was, but that is reasonable for the time period. There were probably some expenses in that time period too that were small. We typically have a few small expenses here and there, as you heard. But what happened is I moved to the state of New York from the state of Indiana. Banks can't handle this. A bunch of statements went missing. I wasn't receiving them. I contacted the bank. I changed my address. I continued to not receive them. At some point, they started charging us $10 a month on each of our accounts. So basically $20 every month, one for checking, one for savings, because they couldn't send me the statements to the address that I had changed my address to. I contacted them again. I got them to fix that. They refunded the money. That's where the negative $180 expense is. That's the refund for the money that they had charged us over those months. And then I asked for our statements, and I was supposed to receive our statements. I never did. I followed up on that again last week because I still hadn't received the statements, and now they're telling me I have to buy our statements because we're outside of the window where they can just send them to us. I said, wait a minute, this was your screw up. Where are my statements? And then they're getting back to me or I'm getting back to them. I don't know. Anyway, that's why we have a gap in our record. And that's why things are a little odd there at the end of 2017, beginning of 2018. That is the reason that I had not handed over to Colin at the end of last meeting. And was going to do it during the summer, but then I did this dance with the bank. I put it off. I didn't get back to it. I just got back to it. I'm handing off to Colin anyway, but there may be some cleanup here to do during the handoff. So that's my far more complicated than usual treasurer's report. I'm sorry. I should clarify so the bottom line is we have $29,735.10.
Okay, and I just went back and looked at the previous meeting minutes. You never did deliver a 2017 report, so that catches us up with everything that was missing.
Okay.
So I need somebody other than myself or Ethan to move to accept the treasurer's report. If
Pete moves to accept.
Okay, and we also need a second from somebody that is not myself or Ethan. Okay, Gary. Okay, so we have a motion and a second to accept the treasurer's report. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
That looks like unanimous to me. Okay, so let's move on to old business, which is mostly Gary. So we'll let him catch up.
My notes are total crap. I'm going to have to rewatch this to do them.
That's fine. I'm recording this both video and audio, and I'll give them both directly to you so that you can do what you need.
Yep. All right. So old business for me is update on the Edra situation. The Edra situation is I have made zero progress. In fact, I think I've made negative progress. unfortunately, I've made negative process. So I've been working with – or I've been trying to work with Free Software Foundation – to figure out, or not Free Software Foundation, Software Freedom Law Center, to figure out what needs to happen here. And I'd almost gotten to, or I just signed like a renewal of their like agreement to work with us or whatever. And then the guy I was working with left. And then the guy that replaced him had no idea what was going on. I had to start over again. That was about a year ago. I got pissed off and just decided to sidestep them. In the meantime, I've been trying to figure out what we need to do for a mail forwarder or a registered agent, and I have not come up with one that isn't entirely freaking shady. So if anybody has any pointers there, I would love to hear them. Or if anybody's like, hey, this is easy, I know how to do this, and wants to take it off my plate, that would be awesome too.
Unfortunately, I don't know how to do that. If I did, I would gladly do it for you.
I don't understand exactly what the problem is, but we can talk about it offline. I mean, I know the address change problem, but I don't understand the mail forwarder registered agent exactly what you're trying to accomplish, but I think we should probably take that offline.
Right. Just the abridged version is, unless we want to have somebody's real address there, we need to get a registered agent or a mail forwarding service.
We have a registered agent.
Do we? Okay, we'll take this offline. I need to talk to you because this is stuff I did not know.
Yeah, that's...
Yeah, CT Corp is our registered agent. We are not currently paying for mail forwarding. I mean, I will give you the quick update here as well. We are not currently paying for mail forwarding for anything but legal notices, but I believe they can provide more than that if we wanted them to. We would have to find out what the pricing is.
Okay. All right, yeah.
That's what we pay them $160 a year for, is to be our registered agent in the state of Delaware.
Gotcha. Cool.
But we can talk about this offline.
Yep.
Come back with a proposal.
That sounds awesome. All right, so next on the agenda here is update on for infrastructure. As many of you know, our network Redux servers are ridiculously, ridiculously out of date. They're Wheezy, I think, Debian Wheezy, which is about to become Debian old stable. No, old stable.
No, it's already old stable.
Is it? Okay, well.
It's already unsupported.
Right. So what I have been doing is I have been slowly containerizing everything and moving it to a DigitalOcean Kubernetes cluster, which I am currently paying for out of pocket. I have applied to them to get open source reimbursement, but I have not heard back from that yet. There's a lot of big stuff that needs to move yet. Track is a nightmare. I've spent some time using Adium stuff as proof of concept. We don't have them up and running yet either. But long-term, it looks like getting rid of the network redux stuff is probably the way to go. But that's just kind of the way I'm going with it since it's on my plate now. John, was there anything you wanted to add to that?
The other thing is we have Nicobar is also still running Wheezy. I don't think it's a good
really? Idea. Our new server is still running Wheezy? That's awesome.
Yes. I don't think it's a good idea to completely get rid of it, but as soon as we can get track off of it and get it upgraded to something more reasonable, I think that would be a really good idea.
Getting track moved isn't entirely difficult. It's just there's a lot of moving parts to it, and I don't have them all figured out yet. That said, I didn't really want to move the email because making sure we stay out of spam lists and stuff like that is hard. But that's also one of the reasons why it's like we barely use our email. Is it worth keeping it kind of thing? I've been back and forth on this one a million times.
So as far as the blacklisting thing for email, we can if we figure out what we want to do with it and add the new provider like now, right, and then just let the addition sit there for a while before we start using it, that should handle that transition, right? To give the blacklist time to update, or the white lists, or the gray lists, or the whatever kind of lists we need to be in.
Yeah, whatever magic they're using. It's not a bad idea to add them in as an MX record now.
As soon as we figure out what we want to do, I think we should do that.
Okay, yeah, no, that's a good call.
And as far as email, I don't know how much of this is report and how much of this, I mean, we're going to get to a new business or whatever, but I love the idea of getting out of things. I don't know who we're using as our registrar, but for me, for example, my registrar will give me email addresses for free, quite a few of them, along with my registration, and they'll host those. And their service is kind of crappy, but as long as people just, you know, check their mail and stuff, it's fine if we're dropping mailing lists. If we're not dropping mailing lists, that's a different story.
Right. I should mention that too. So what I've been trying to do is one of the other things I'm doing with trying to consolidate the services into one spot and that kind of stuff is make it so we increase our bus factor. For those of you that don't know, bus factor is a grim term of how many people have to get hit by a bus before your business is screwed. And right now our bus factor is like maybe one. Actually, I think we're at zero in some places because I've had to reverse.
It's negative. Yeah, it's negative because there are like five different people that if any of us were hit by buses, some part of it would fall apart.
Right. So what I've been doing is I've been trying to consolidate all of the domains under Gandhi, Gandhi.net. It's where my registrar is. There is an org set up there. I think I already gave John permission to it and I thought I gave somebody else, but maybe not. But I've been trying to do that kind of stuff where we have organizations so that multiple people have access, stuff like that. I also have a one password vault that's shared with other Pigeon developers, which is passwords to get into infrastructure and stuff like that. The Kubernetes stuff, I'm still trying to figure out how to do auth yet. DigitalOcean themselves don't have an auth solution that's feasible. But I might set up a backdoor, quote unquote, so that if anybody needs something, I'm not around, they can get into it.
So they do for their virtual private servers.
Right. The Kubernetes stuff in particular, you need to get a like authorized token or OIDC or something like that. They have all that turned off in Kubernetes right now as they're trying to figure it out.
I see.
So like what I can do is I can create a service account in Kubernetes and then just give somebody that token that's generated from that. And then they can use that to auth. The problem with that is that token is just there and it's wide open and it doesn't expire. So I've been hesitant to do that because of those reasons.
Understood.
But I think that pretty much covers everything on infrastructure. Other things to note on infrastructure is that iamfreedom.org is already moved over to Kubernetes. I had accidentally broken the mailing list during that whole situation and the wiki. I still have a few loose ends to tie up there. The wiki is getting rerouted from iamfreedom.org/wiki to wiki.iamfreedom.org. And the mailing list, I need to figure out. I don't have a solution for that yet. I'm trying to get them to list.iamfreedom.org, but mailman is a giant pain in my butt when it comes to setting up virtual hosts.
So MX solves that problem, right? I mean, we can just put the...
But
you're talking about the archives.
Yeah, the archives and the management interface is what's broken right now.
Yeah, okay, gotcha.
But yeah, aside from the mailing list still work and function as is, just like you can't get in to like do moderation or mod approval or denial or whatever, and like registering, you can't subscribe or unsubscribe from the web interface. You have to use email for it, which is weird and clunky, but yeah, that part still works.
Now the admin stuff that we would normally use the web interface for can be done via the command line, but it is ridiculously complicated to do it.
Yeah, like I said, all I really need to do here is figure out how to actually get it to accept a new virtual host as an old virtual host, and then it should just work. Because I already added the CNAME or a record, whatever. I added the DNS entry. I set up whatever web servers on that machine for it. I don't remember. And all that's there, just like Mailman just doesn't see the archives or anything because it's dumb. So
I will try it and see if I can remember. I went through the same situation a couple years ago with my former employer, where I added lists to the domain name for Mailman. And it went surprisingly smoothly, although there were, of course, you know, a few little details to work out. Of course, being a former employer, I don't have access to any of that anymore, including all of the notes from that. Although there might be details, I'll have to check. There might actually be reasonable details in the Mailman mailing list from when I was working through that.
Okay, yeah, if you want to take a look, let me know. It's not that we're adding new lists, it's that we're trying to move iamfreedom.org's mailing list from iamfreedom.org/CGIBinMailman, whatever, to list.iamfreedom.org/CGIBinMailman, yada, 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 yada.
Right, but yeah, that's what I did. I went from, you know, staff@hdfgroup.org to staff@lists.hdfgroup.org. So gotcha. It sounds like the exact same thing.
All right, cool. Yeah, otherwise just hit me up either on Discord or Hangouts or whatever. And we can figure that out from there.
I've got a question for Gary about that. But way back at the start, he said he was paying for some of the stuff out of his own pocket. Can you just clarify what that is? And because you kind of glossed over it. Hang on, shouldn't we be paying for that because it's our infrastructure?
So what I am paying for right now out of my pocket is the DigitalOcean infrastructure for Kubernetes. I didn't bring it up initially to be reimbursed or anything because I didn't know how long it was or how much it was going to cost long term and all that. And there's not a ton of stuff there right now. There's a bit, but like, we're not actually using much of it. The cost right now.
But that, to me, that's immaterial. If it's our stuff, you know, we should be paying for it, right, whether it's you or somebody else doing things, you know, right. That's I think we should stick to is, you know, someone's taking care of our stuff. We got to pay for it.
Right. So right now, what I was looking at doing was, I've applied to get DigitalOcean to cover it for us because they have an open source program for it. And then all of the amount I've paid for, I was just going to kind of count as donating it to the project. Because it's kind of this whole transition thing of how we're moving everywhere and stuff like that. But I mean, if people want to reimburse for it,
still immediately in the pocket. And it's the principle again, no matter who does this kind of thing.
That's yeah, I understand that, but the thing is, like, I went ahead and did this.
Yeah, I
understand that, but the thing is, I went ahead and did this without asking with the board for approval on money and stuff like that. So, like, I didn't follow the bylaws.
I guess throwing it out to the board that should we reimburse Gary for this at the moment.
I think once Gary knows how much he's what he's expended and what he needs or what the ongoing costs are or whatever, then I think we should definitely, that's something we should reimburse. But if I understand correctly, Gary, your big concern is you don't even know what it is yet. And so we maybe need to have this conversation at a later time.
Right. So right now I'm spending about $70 a month on it.
Holy. I mean,
it's six nodes and a load balancer. Actually, it's a little more than that for volumes. and it was much lower.
How much traffic do we have?
So that's the thing. I'm building it out to handle more traffic than we have right now, because I don't know how track's going to handle on this and that kind of stuff.
Because track is a royal resource hog.
Right.
It is, but we've been running it on one machine for 15 years.
Yeah, running is not the adjective I would use to describe its speed.
Agreed, agreed. But also, we're moving away from it.
Right, but
and people aren't using it. So, I mean, I think if this incurs cost that's more than like $5 a month, then we should just be moving it to a VPS and paying the $5 a month.
But we're...
Keep in mind that we have no income.
Yeah, I'm aware of that. I mean, this is a whole topic we should probably take off stream. But I don't think we're going to solve the long-term management problems by just moving to another VPS provider.
Yes, that's definitely something we should take off screen stream, because Kubernetes also doesn't solve that.
Okay, yeah.
I mean, it's just a different pile of crap on a different day, right? I mean, as long as we're running services,
right,
we have management problems, which is why and maybe we should have this conversation briefly now, but I mean, I'm a big fan of moving things to like Atlassian services and things like that, right?
Yeah, the problem is, so we did have an open source plan for Bamboo, for the hosted Bamboo, and then they shut it down. So now we host our own Bamboo on the Kubernetes cluster. We could go to Jira.
Did they shut it down for because they shut the program down, or?
They shut it down because they want Bitbucket Pipelines to become the new open source thing. Bitbucket Pipelines does not fit our needs, whereas Bamboo does.
Okay, that's really unfortunate.
Yeah, I know. We could move to Jira, except I know everybody's going to groan about it, and it's going to be even harder to get people to actually open tickets and stuff like that. I mean, there's a million things here that we could be talking about.
Yeah, Jira's a little complicated for an open source.
I know of one open source project that uses it for certain, and it works all right for them, that being FreeSwitch. But their user base is a lot more enterprise.
Yeah, they have a pretty technical user base.
Yeah,
that's a conversation we need to have. I mean, I know it's an ongoing conversation, Gary, and I don't mean to harp. I know you've been working on this for a long time. I know we've made some progress, and we have setbacks, and we have steps forward. But I think we need to decide where we want to send this stuff. But whatever we do, we have to keep in mind we have no income, one. And two, anything that we can outsource, we should be outsourcing, because whether we're managing Kubernetes or whether we're managing a VPS or whether we're managing, any self-hosted piece of software, we're not getting out from under the fact that somebody's got to jack with this stuff. Inevitably, only one person does it, and then we have the bus problem again. Inevitably, one person does it, right? And Gary, you know the exact story on that, because it was not you, and then making it you was a humongous pain in the butt, right?
Yep. This is definitely a topic we should take offline. I don't know if we want to figure out a date for that or time or anything, but we can take that off stream and go from there.
Yeah, probably we should schedule a time. I mean, maybe not right this minute, but we should get together the people who are interested in this topic. And schedule a time to figure out like what is our overarching goal, and then come back to the mailing list with a proposal that meets that need.
Yeah, a separate technical meeting away from the board meeting certainly sounds like the way to go with this.
I think so.
6 weeks after the board meeting. So, what are we doing? Set Gary's report and then propose. I'll propose a meeting, or what? What do you reckon?
I'll just like email the mailing list or something and go from there.
Yeah, do we want to have a date that we want to, like an approximate date we want to shoot for to make sure this doesn't fall on the floor? Like I think Peter's suggestion of maybe, in a month or a few weeks.
Yeah, so it's kind of bit in front of our mind and it isn't dropped on the floor.
We don't do it again next year. We don't have the same conversation, right?
Right. Yeah. So I will say that I will email the board by Friday.
Okay. And we'll shoot for something maybe like second week of July, which is a month from now.
Yep. Sounds good to me.
Sounds reasonable.
And sooner is okay, right? But certainly by second week of July, right?
Yeah.
Yep, that all sounds reasonable to me.
All right. So I think we've covered the infrastructure stuff pretty much all over. The next item on old business is for me to present an update on the IMF website and the wiki. I already covered the wiki. The IMF website, for those of you that haven't been to imfreedom.org lately, you will see it looks different. The site was originally written by one of my stream viewers, and it was just a Vue.js site that basically reads Markdown and spits out the site. One of the things we've been trying to do going forward is like track is all in Genji templates, which nobody knows anymore and nobody wants to know, but everybody knows Markdown. So we've been trying to lower that barrier to entry by doing stuff in Markdown. A couple of weeks ago, I'd asked somebody who is working on the new Pigeon site, which we can touch base on here too.
Can I just talk to Gary? Richard's on the board mail list at the moment asking for a Zoom link to hop into the conference.
Is he not in the Hangout?
I don't know exactly.
Somebody got that?
Yeah, he's in there.
Yeah, I will send him a direct message here with the link. You go on, Gary.
Okay, so iamfreedom.org was redesigned by Daniel Reedley, or I'm screwing up his name, it's in here. Riley, something like that. Really, whatever.
Riley, yeah.
And he went through and redid the whole site and redesigned it, made it much more easier to manage all that. A couple of weeks ago, I'd thrown the idea out to somebody who was helping John and myself with the new Pigeon website, which I'll tell you the link for that in a second. The new Pigeon site uses a static site generator called Hugo. It is all the rave right now. The one of the reasons we ended up going with it for the new Pigeon website was it's just easy to use and there's lots of themes and stuff built around it, that kind of stuff. Anyways, I pinged him to say, hey, now that we have the new Pigeon site isn't out yet, it's not even ready for like preview yet. Like people can look at it, but like it's whatever. We have to get the milestones on when what to call cutover and all that. Since that's in Hugo, why don't we see if we can get the I Am Freedom site in Hugo? And that being Jason Allen, I think.
Yes, that's his
name. Okay. He went through, took the design that Daniel put together, and then made it into a Hugo theme so that what you see on www.iamfreedom.org right now is actually another Hugo site. And that is running on the Kubernetes cluster as well. A few big things to note about this is there is no more PHP. basically, all of the pages are a simple Markdown file that we will go through and edit. So when I go and put the meeting minutes in, I'm just going to convert it to Markdown, drop a file in a directory, and it's going to magically work. Or once it's committed, pull requested, whatever. And then the image will build, it'll deploy to the cluster, and everything will just work. One of the other things to note is previously, because of lack of options, all of our audio recordings and video recordings were dumped into the repository. And that obviously was not a good idea for a Mercurial repository. So what Jason did was when he did the redesign to move iamfreedom.org to Hugo, he actually just created a new repo so that we lost all that history of all the files because the initial clone was like 2 gigs, and that sucks. That said, all of those audio and video files now are going into an S3-like clone that we run on the Kubernetes cluster. It's a program called Minio, and all those files are just served statically out of there. They're publicly available, and then they're no longer in the repository, and we have a place to upload them to. So, yeah, I think that covered all of it. So if you haven't checked out iamfreedom.org, go ahead and do it. Let me know. We were kind of really struggling on what to do for the header colors. So if you're not a fan of it and you have better suggestions, by all means, please let me know.
Okay, that covers all of your stuff, Gary?
I think so. unless anybody has any follow-ups, questions, comments, queries, quandaries.
No, I'll say that I'm a fan of Hugo and rendering everything statically, though.
Awesome.
Yeah, now that I'm getting... what the hell? Now that I'm getting more familiar with it, I'm quite pleased with it myself. So do we have any other old business?
Oh, wait, sorry. I just realized I didn't mention, if you want to check out the new Pigeon website, it is nest, N-E-S-T, as in a bird nest, .pigeon.im. That is what the new site is going to look like. There's still a couple of tweaks we've got to do theming-wise for, like, inline code comments look kind of weird when there's a bunch of them on a page, stuff like that. But what we're doing is we're going through the track wiki and trying to take all those wiki pages and convert them into Markdown and get them over to that site. And then that'll replace pigeon.im. Developer will be the same thing, but the wiki will be marked read-only at some point. This is still long-term, but in case anybody wanted to see what it looks like, that's where you can find it. I'll send you all the link in the Hangout after the meeting.
Okay, so any other old business then?
Yeah. So just real quick, I want to say we had the business last year for me to hand over the books to Colin. I touched on that when I gave my treasurer's report. I haven't handed the books over to Colin, but I am prepared to do that. I gave Matt and Colin all of the relevant information that I have earlier today. I wanted to wait until close to this call because I wanted to make sure I had entered everything, you know, prior to this call. It turns out that I'm actually missing some data. Matt, I'll be pushing some changes to the 2019 books that I have here that are not in the copy that you have. But at any rate, so I will be handing that over to Colin. Everything is done. Matt and Colin are both on the bank account. As soon as they feel like they're comfortable that they have all the information that they need, then I will contact the bank and have myself removed from the bank account so that it remains the treasurer and the president on the account. So I don't know if anybody has any questions about that process, that transition. I do want to bring up, I have been doing essentially all of the maintenance, and in fact, I just figured out today, I think I'm behind. I think I need to contact CT Corp about our Delaware registration, because I think that was supposed to happen earlier this year. But I have been doing basically all of the paperwork for IM Freedom for like 15 years now or whatever, except for the paperwork that nobody was doing because I didn't know it existed. So in this handoff, I think we want to make sure that we know what paperwork people need to do. And I'm not sure that Colin should necessarily be the one that does it all. I've been doing it just because it's easier to do it than tell somebody how to do it. But now that I have to tell somebody how to do it, it doesn't really matter who I tell. I'm going to write up a document of the things that normally happen and have to happen. I'm going to, and I will send that out. I will certainly send it to Matt and Colin, but if anybody else is interested, you know, let me know. Gary, I don't know if some of this stuff is, things that might fall in the secretary's, wheelhouse. Anyway, that's my old business update on moving the, treasurer, responsibility for the treasurer to Colin. If anybody has any questions or comments, I would be happy to take them on that.
Okay.
I think it makes sense to, you know, just list out what all of those, you know, various pieces of paperwork are and then determine, you know, what role they fit under.
Well, I was going to send a document for that, but we can discuss it now if you want. It's not a long list, but it's a list of things that have to happen.
Sure. Now or later, I'm not particularly opinionated on that.
Okay. Okay, I'll send out a document. There's only four or five things, right? I'll send out a document here soon so that people can see. The only issue is we failed to do some of them for a number of years, and it turns out that's far more difficult than just doing them. And also more expensive. Okay, that's all I have then.
Okay, then let's go ahead and move on to new business then, and we'll start with the election of board members and officers. I haven't heard otherwise, so I'm assuming that we're just going to re-elect all of ourselves to the same positions?
I move that we vote on the slate that is in the agenda, which is John for president, Matthew vice president, Gary secretary. Wait a minute. Matthew is vice president?
Yes.
Matthew was president last year?
No.
No, he's always...
Was Matthew ever president?
No.
Oh, I have Matthew on the accounts because Ian couldn't be on the accounts because right. He is not a U.S. person.
Right.
Okay, so that's something we may want to discuss regarding the bank account stuff. We can discuss that later. So, John president, Matthew vice president. Let me start over. I will move that we accept the slate of roster of officers as it currently stands, which is John as president, Matthew as vice president, Gary as secretary, Colin as treasurer, and then four directors at large, Ethan Blanton, Ian Robb, Richard Lager, and Peter Lawler.
Okay, we have a motion. Do we have a second?
I'll second.
Yeah, I'll second that.
Okay, we have a motion and a second to accept the slate of officers as presented in the agenda. Is there any other discussion? All those in favor, say aye.
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 Sounds like unanimous passing to me. Okay, so then we'll move on to the next item, which was Peter's proposal in my place.
What?
So we had discussed on the mailing list, and you said you would bring it up since I technically can't. The discussion about
can you remind me, because I actually haven't read the mailing list because I forgot that there was actually a mailing list. But anyway, remind me what I meant to remind you.
So the proposal was that we were going to vote on dispersing $5,000 to a party to work full time on Pigeon, Adium, LibPurple, and the Iron Freedom Infrastructure.
Oh, right, yeah. Pending just, you know, legal stuff and that kind of thing, that it was subcontracting and didn't fall into employing kind of regions. Let's give people money to work on stuff because we've got a lot of money in the bank. Yes, now I remember. I can't remember the exact wording, though.
Okay, so the exact wording that we have in the agenda is a proposal from Peter that Iron Freedom disperse $5,000 to a party, individual, or group to work full-time on Pigeon, Adium, and LibPurple for a month. Full-time to be defined as approximately 40 to 50 hours per week for the purpose of this proposal.
Yep, I'm proposing that.
So I have a couple of points to make on that. The one I make at all times, which is we do have some money, but we have no income. I'm not saying that I oppose this on those grounds, but it is something we need to think about and probably discuss. Two, I would amend it to be for the number of a little bit concerned about the implications of asking someone to work full time. I don't want to get wade into those weeds. And I want to point out that what we will almost certainly have to do then is 1099 at the end of the year, assuming it's a U.S. person, which the next every day you get our lunch and blah, 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 you're an employer. If you say, hey, can you do whatever 40 times 4 is 160 or 170 or whatever many hours it would work out for in a month, hours of work for me for $5,000
as well. So I just
And in the U.S. also state to state is a problem.
You know better than me what's going on.
Yeah, so my suggestion would be that we change it to be the number of hours that we want, and I don't think there's any reason we have to say necessarily full-time for a month. I would say, you know, over a period of time that is reasonable, whether that's a month, 2 months, whatever, you know, let them sort of...
this one off, not particularly concerned, but, you know, I think we need to do something about the fundraising, because I don't think this is going to go away.
Yeah.
Because we're all getting older, and we've all got other responsibilities and everything, and we don't have the time that we had when we were in our 20s. put our minds.
Street tax, I don't know what the story is. Sometimes there's matching, et cetera. Employees of businesses can make donations. And then I think maybe they do like nonprofit fundraising drives or whatever. Like everybody gives some money or whatever. But we have been for the past couple of years getting a couple $100 a year from it. I think in the report that I just gave, we got like 400 in 1 year and like 250 in the next or something. From this for a long time. Gary, I understand your hesitancy to speak, but on the other hand, I mean, your input is valuable here because you are one of the only sources of work and or income that we have going on right now. So,
And this is why I wanted to split it up, the topic into two things, because I really wanted to hear from Gary and his thoughts.
So probably somewhere between 4 to 8 weeks there. So just to be clear, it's not exact. It would probably last longer than a month. But yeah.
Sure. And I think I also want to be clear that $5,000 for a month of full-time work from a professional developer is beyond a reasonable rate.
Right.
Right. So, I mean, however long it lasts you is one thing, but also the,
because you don't have a weapon. I've also been pushing pigeon stickers, which if anybody wants any, let me know, because I have all the pigeon stickers. I even made game ones. as a giveaway, stuff like that, to try to like remind people that we're still around, or that pigeon's still around. Because one of the first things you hear out of people when you go like, oh, pigeon, I used to use that. So just trying to remarket the properly based on the outcome rather than just time. So yeah, I mean, that's definitely an option as well. There's just so many moving parts right now that might be hard to pick out, but I mean, we can work on that and figure that out too.
And to be clear, when I originally proposed this and asked for somebody to propose it in my place, I wasn't necessarily saying that we should have a firm decision on it during the meeting.
Part of my thinking when this went through the mail list was that, to be quite honest, I think, and separating Gary out a bit as well, the stuff that he has been doing, and this ties back to what we were talking about before about his expenses out of pocket and stuff, over the last couple of years, you know, I think, you know, give him a grant, you know, instead of actually just... I mean, yeah, it would be nice to tie it to some work and that kind of stuff. And I have thorough feelings that he would do a whole bunch of stuff either way. But perhaps we should just grant him the money. And that makes a lot of these issues go away. And, I mean, I trust the dude to you know, continue working. I don't think he's going to suddenly up stumps. But, I mean, that's kind of...
So I don't know. I don't know how concerned I am about that, but I want to throw it out there as something. I agree with you in principle, Peter. I absolutely agree with you in principle. And frankly, yeah, I don't know. If we had a regular source of income, I think the just giving money away would be easier to justify. Some of them have all been redonated. Back to the organization. So, for example, I would be rather surprised to find out that Gary had not already paid to IMF a substantial portion of that money over the years. Just to throw out as a, you know, another data point.
Right, because Gary has mentored several Summer of Code projects, two or three, if I can swear to.
At least. I mean, I think I've done like four or five, and Gary's done probably as many as I have.
I did probably the first year. One the next year, one the next, and then me and Ethan co-mentored AntKit, I think. So 5 or 6. But that's still $3,000. But
yeah, but that's what I'm saying. It's like, I mean, right there is a large portion of the money that we're talking about paying out was actually donated by, say, if you add together what Gary and myself have donated, there's your $5,000.
Right.
Yeah, right. So
I need to get back to the actual proposal, which is changing just the wording to start with. So it's task oriented, or what was it? Task and hour oriented. Before we start worrying too much, we can all agree that Gary's put in a stellar job, and this kind offer of him to proceed on, and you know, is worthy of a bit of dosh. Which is Australian slang for money. But, yeah, so I'd just like to see this move on a bit if we can change the wording on that.
So
we all acknowledge that we have an income problem, that, you know, this is a one-off thing, right? It's not going to be necessarily repeated without looking at where our income is coming from, but this motion is worded in such a way so that it can be used again if a future board decides that, you know, they've got the income to do it again. It's not necessarily requirement right now that we get too hung up on, you know, but where the money is coming from. The money is there. You know, and this is a one-off. And I think we all acknowledge it's a one-off just for this instance.
Yes. So, Matthew, let me ask. So here's to get back to the is it task-oriented, is it hour-oriented, whatever question. I agree with you, Peter, that we've covered the where does the money come from and where is it going, you know, sufficiently at this point. But the task-oriented versus hour-oriented, one concern I have about task-oriented is that there's two kinds of task-oriented goals. One is where you set a goal that you know is going to take at least the number of hours that you want to ask for, and then you run the danger of it running way over. And two is when you set a task that takes far fewer than the number of hours you asked for. So when it invariably runs over, stay under you're not committing somebody to indentured servitude, right? To do something.
Way not, fixed 2 hours and is instead designated for a purpose. Then that solves a lot of the potential issues, or at least avoids potential issues with, you know, we're setting a precedent of paying somebody a pittance, or, you know, just issues like that. Where, I mean, we can set it in a very generic way, where we're giving somebody $5,000 to explore the feasibility of X, and prototype it, or, you know, whatever. It doesn't matter. But it could certainly be worded in such a way that would give us the flexibility that we would need for.
So I have a couple of thoughts here. Can you guys all hear me okay?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yep.
So one of the biggest problems from a process and legal perspective here is the conflict of interest. The implication here is that the money would go to Gary, right? I know that we're trying to keep that as a separate item, but that's where things are going. So the first question is that I have is kind of a meta question, like, do we have a conflict of interest policy? And if not, sub question, like, are we legally required to have one? Is that something we should fix?
We have one.
Okay, so we might want to look at what that policy says.
It is the generic IRS one, and it's next to useless.
Okay, so I've got that up in another window then. I was reading that earlier, where the basic gist seems to be that we're supposed to make sure that whatever services that we're getting, I can find the language, but basically that whatever services we're getting, that we can get them, that we can't get a better deal without a conflict of interest. From my perspective, I think that's going to be easy to meet with the proposal in hand here, because we're talking about, as you said, effectively potentially paying somebody a pittance, you know, or as Ethan said, you know, $5,000 for a month of work from a senior developer, we're not going to find a better deal somewhere, especially when you consider the experience of the developer in question or the proposed developer in question on the project in question, right? I don't think we're going to find a better arm's length deal, than is being proposed here. So I don't have a huge problem with that. The other thing that I'd like to ask though is, there's been a lot of focus on this being a one-time thing and so forth. I'm asking this halfway to be provocative, but not entirely. This is a halfway serious question. What if we were to just spend the money in some way and just wind it down? Like, what if IMF were to use what we've got to give, say, Pigeon the best chance of getting to a 3.0 and, like, rising back from the ashes, and that either works or it doesn't, but, like, take the stab at it and just see what happens? Because honestly, to some extent, it seems like we're just sitting on the money and going through like pro forma board meetings every year with no real intention of where it's going to go, other than perhaps sitting on that as a war chest to, you know, for the lawyer thing, which is valuable, but again, it's only a half serious question, but it is at least a half serious question. Maybe we should just wind down the foundation, spend the money on our mission. I'm not saying like light it on fire, but spend the money on our mission and wind it up.
That's an interesting thought, Richard. My initial reaction would be that kick it on to next year, but this year have that as a singular expense, and then kick that on to another meeting. Probably as a result of the outcome of how this work proposed work goes. That's an interesting one.
So I think there is a real room for discussion of the, sort of say, hey, if we can't come up with sustaining income to be able to spend some money, which we have not, to be clear, succeeded in doing in 15 years, but it wasn't really our goal necessarily, then what are we doing? That is certainly a question to ask. I have no problem, to be 100% clear, with sitting on a war chest because I was sued. Not everybody maybe here was. Who was here when that happened? Most of us were, right?
When you say you were sued, were you named in the suit? Like you individually?
There was no suit ultimately leveled.
Okay.
There were threats leveled, and it was settled before the suit was filed. But I think I would have been a named party in that suit.
I don't know if I would have been named. I was definitely here. I don't know if I had achieved developer status yet.
I suspect everyone in the about box would have been a crazy patch rider would have been named somewhere along the way, or even a contributor to the project somehow would have been named as a co-pilot.
Yeah, maybe. We don't know because they never filed, but it was an 800-pound gorilla, right? We're talking about a suit from somebody who could just keep suing people until the problem went away, right? And they did settle, and that's fine. It was the second suit that was threatened. The first suit was a couple of years before. Maybe there has been one since. When was the Microsoft thing?
Microsoft?
I'm not aware of that one.
What?
Yeah, there's been several of these over the years. None of them have resulted in any action against any developer. This one was scary enough that we lawyered up.
So the only ones I knew of were the two from AOL. The first one that they couldn't find Sean or whoever was the lead at the time.
And then, I think it was Eric.
The one that caused us to form IMF.
Yeah, the first one was before I came around. I think Eric was the lead developer at the first time that AOL came after us. And then there was the second one, which caused us to form IMF, which was also AOL. Legendary. Microsoft threw a shot over the bows at some point, or Yahoo, one of the two, threw a shot over the bows at some point, although nothing ever came of it. But at any rate, long story short, I don't want to talk about that forever necessarily, but I do want to say that as someone who was likely to have a suit leveled against me, I'm perfectly fine with sitting on a pile of money. However, if we decide that's not something we want to do, I'm also kind of okay with that at this point because I think the world has changed.
On top of that, there's an idea I don't have fully fleshed out yet, but I'll mention it here. In the future, I kind of want to make Pigeon itself, at least the main repository, only include open spec protocols. So that being IRC, XMPP, and
I think Zephyr would be counted in that, wouldn't it?
And Zephyr too, right?
Yeah, simple.
And simple, yeah. So the idea here is that I don't know how you know Jorge or Masca, as his handle goes by. He came into the U.S. on a H-1B, and he ended up working at Microsoft. And basically, because of the reverse engineered network code we have in our program, the Microsoft lawyers would not allow him under any circumstances to contribute to the project. That is something I do not want companies to be able to use against us. So the idea of putting proprietary protocols out into sub repos, which maintenance of that kind of sucks, but it also opens us up to more contributors. And I think,
and also Ian is proof positive that we can have a million external.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So like the core project itself getting sued at that point isn't likely, but that said, IMF being able to help.
Well, what we were sued over was not over interop. It was really? Over branding.
Oh, right, 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 right. Right, that's right. But yeah, so like even if they were to come over, come at somebody over interop or something, I think IMF's place would be a little bit more important there, because then you would have an individual developer, unless we then include all of Ian's plugins and other people's protocol plugins as under the IMF umbrella, or just become, I don't know the correct term for it for them, but you know, be representatives of them or something.
Our charter says that we do represent them.
Right. I just couldn't think of the right word. And that, like, that's the point. So it's like, on one hand, like the core project itself would be less likely to be sued, but we'd be kind of dodging and leaving somebody else in the background to get hit, which we would then of course represent them. But you know, so there's pros and cons to it is all I'm trying to say.
Yeah. Yeah. Understood. So, okay. I don't know. I guess that was the counterpoint to Richard's, what do we think about winding it down is, hey, this war chest does have some value, but I actually think the value has changed a lot in the intervening 15 years. And I think that maybe a sort of Fisher cut bait approach may not be a terrible idea. Maybe, as Peter says, do a one-time thing with an eye toward, like, let's figure out, is this something we want to do before next year? Like, either come up with an income stream so that we can actually spend money to think things happen, or spend the money we have.
Yeah. Without an income stream, the point is moot, rather kind of, you know, it's, you know.
Yeah, because let's be clear that if we dropped 100% of our money on a developer right now, we would feed a developer to the end of 2019 maybe, and then they would start starving again.
No, I've met a few.
And then we would be able to pay our filing fees.
So where are we at now with this proposal? What are we doing with it?
Do we want to vote on this today? I think that's the question we need to answer. If the answer is yes, then we need to come up with a concrete proposal. If the answer is no, then we need to come up with some responsibility to take it to the list and figure it out so that we can actually make progress on it while it's still relevant.
Okay, so what if we take this to the list and set ourselves a goal of having something concrete fleshed out by, say, a week from today? And then we can call a vote on it at that point.
That's fine, but I think somebody has to volunteer to shepherd that.
And technically that shouldn't be me.
And it shouldn't be Gary.
Yeah, I was going to say it shouldn't be me either.
All right, I'll try to do that.
I'm just thinking.
Come again?
Well, you know. Okay, so let's cut this again. That you know, we are basically talking about Gary now, and you know, we've got a vague idea of proposal, and in this instance, Gary has, you know, heard the voices, heard what the directors have said, and that kind of stuff. Perhaps it is on him to come back to us with exactly what he's offering. We're interested.
So that's a fair point. So what we can do today is solicit a proposal from Gary. Gary, what would you want to work on that you think would take something approximating whatever that winds up being? We should do the math, but it's somewhere between 160 and 180 hours.
I mean, I don't want to put more work on you, Gary, but... Well, I think this is now kind of in your court of, of just fixing up the wording on what you're prepared to do and what you're not prepared to do. And it's a go.
That makes sense.
Right, right. So I just pull up my Trello board real quick here. I'm using Trello to track like high level things. So as many of you know, we are actually finally a year later coming to an end of removing WebKit. So I would say probably let's finish the WebKit removal and get to feature parity with Pigeon 2's input widgets, although that's kind of vague.
It is a little bit vague, but on the other hand, it is a quantifiable amount of work, more so than many other things that could be proposed, right? It's much less vague than many of the things that are on the Pigeon 3 roadmap, I think.
Right, right. And that's kind of the idea. So, like, this week I was...
And also, it's pressing.
Right, right. So, for those of you...
Because of the WebKit removal problem.
So, WebKit is being... Or Pigeon 3 uses WebKit 1 GTK. WebKit 1 GTK is deprecated, and it's being removed from Linux distributions. It's already removed from Fedora. It's removed from Debian Buster. It's removed from OpenSUSE. It's removed from Arch, and I'm sure there's others. The obvious idea was to move to WebKit 2, except WebKit 2 doesn't have a Windows port. So that eliminates a large portion of our user base. So we threw that idea out. So what I started doing begrudgingly was I basically rewrote GTK IMHTML as a new modernized widget. And that lives in a separate repository now called Talkit 2. There was an oversight on my part when it comes to dependencies. So it doesn't exactly work on Debian Stretch. But that is something that can be investigated and looked at. But so Talkit 2 as it stands right now mostly works. There's a lot of stuff that needs to be cleaned up. Like, I just started working on dynamic tags. So like you can do different color formatting in your message and that, but all the base tags are there.
So can you, Gary, can you put together an email that suggests I mean, because what I think we need you to do, I'm afraid that what you just proposed is something that's actually, when you get looking at line items, you're going to look at it and be like, actually, this might be a lot of hours, right?
Yeah, that was kind
of maybe go through and find what you think is somewhere in the neighborhood of the time that we're looking for of things to work on. Bullet them out for the number of hours you kind of expect to throw at them. And then I secondarily suggest that, and this is not binding right now if we're not going to make the vote, but that we go ahead and put a stop loss on the proposal, which is that if you spend a certain number of hours on a feature and like you spend it in good faith, then even if the feature is not done, like we're happy. Right. That's a pretty standard thing in contracts, right? So you would avoid winding up paying someone for a million hours to do something that it turns out costs a million hours and you didn't anticipate that, or they wind up eating a million hours on something that everybody thought was going to take less than that, right? But if you propose a list of items and how long you think it's going to take, and we all look at it and say that seems reasonable, and it takes you longer than that, then what has happened is a set of professional developers have misjudged the scope of a problem. And you shouldn't be on the hook for that, and we shouldn't be on the hook for that, right? Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, that makes perfect sense.
Does that sound fair, that you could come back with an email with such a proposal?
Yeah, definitely.
Does everyone else think that sounds like a reasonable path forward here?
I think so. I have a couple comments, again, on this. So we're here wearing IMF hats. So our goal is to, you know, promote instant messaging rather than get too in the weeds on Pigeon development. But I think from my perspective, the number one thing that we can do for free and open source instant messaging right now is get Pigeon 3 out the door. And Gary talked about a plan to that. So I don't need an answer now, Gary, but I would encourage you to think about what is the number one problem or the biggest, most important thing that has to be done to get Pigeon 3 out the door. And I think it probably is the WebKit problem. But that's kind of the question. Like, IMF's thing is, what's the best thing we can do now? Maybe get Pigeon 3 out. What's the biggest thing to get Pigeon 3 out? Is that the WebKit thing? What's the most important part in there that, you know, might be done? And I might also suggest that you take an approach of target Ethan's goal of what will be about the right number of hours, But you may also want to take like a second proposal option of, I think what we need to do is get Talkatoo done, and like that's 90% of the work of getting Pigeon 3 out the door, and that's actually going to take $8,000 or $10,000. Yeah. And if there's something where a little bit more would let you fully complete the goal, you may want to make a second proposal. I'm not saying this with any idea that that's the case. Just if I were talking to somebody independently, I think that'd be my question. Like, here's what we're willing to spend. What can you do for that? But also, what do you think is the most important thing to do, and what would that cost me? And that might be the two things that we'd evaluate as a board.
Understood. If I had to answer today, what is the number one problem or thing that needs to be done for Pigeon 3 to be released? It's not WebKit. It's we have to make Pigeon 3 attractive to people again. And like in 2019, you can't go, yeah, we support just chat and not voice and video. My goal for Pigeon 3 is to get voice and video support in there, because otherwise we're never going to bring people back. And then they're going to see us release Pigeon 3 as it is right now, and they're going to go, huh, yeah, I'm not going to use that. And it's going to be bad press. So WebKit is a requirement, but I don't think that's the killer feature that we need to be releasing for.
Is there a voice and video regression in 3?
There's lack of voice and video everywhere. It only works on Linux under certain protocols, and it depends on Farstream, which is in GStream or plugins bad, which nobody wants to install.
But is that different than Pigeon 2?
No. But then what's the point of having a 10-year release window to release the same thing?
Well, part of it would be getting back on track, right? Like the fact that like we have this fork that's like spinning in the weeds or whatever, you know, if there were a Pigeon 3 release tomorrow that was regression free, relatively speaking, from Pigeon 2, that I think is still a useful step.
Yeah, no. So the long-term plan, I don't want to spend too much time on this because we're already way over time, is that, we're going to start doing alpha builds or alpha releases. I've got a lot of infrastructure in place already so that every time we commit, we get packages that go to a package repository that you can just update on your machine and pull the latest version. And that'll be good for preview releases. We did a bunch of work making sure that you can run Pigeon 2 next to Pigeon 3 so you can install them at the same time. So people have an escape hatch and all that. So it's little things like that, which I think are going to help us get us there faster. But part of it too is making sure we can get contributors again. Because if we do release, it does get popular and people want to contribute. If they can't contribute easily, they're not going to contribute, which is going to, you know, make them upset. Then they're not going to use the program anymore. And it's just going to be a death spiral at that point. So it's something just I'm trying to be cognizant of. So,
yeah. I'd just like to add that I'm not concerned about vagueness as long as it's, you know, something that we can actually look at and say, you know, was this done? Was this not done?
I think Gary mentions a very good point there in that, you know, what's the killer fit? What's going to bring developers and users back? And I am a bit concerned that there is no free, no multi-platform voice video chat thing as well that we sponsor or look after. So, you know, I mean, that's up to the individual project, whether they go with a 3 release as a stepping stone to 4, which would bring all that back together. I don't know. That's the individual project. But, yeah, anyway, I'll shut up again.
One more procedural question. Is our plan here that we disburse the money and then the work happens, or the work happens and then we disburse the money?
Honestly, I hadn't thought that far ahead when I originally proposed it.
You know, from a sort of legal and liability perspective and all that, like if we've got goals that we're talking about that are objective, you know, and we can verify those before disbursing the money, that helps a lot on the compliance and conflict of interest sort of angles. That probably pushes up the timeline even faster for Gary if he's got to, you know, do the work first and then get the money. Because he's got to burn on his existing nest egg.
Yeah, or I mean, I think we can discuss this also once we have a proposal, but there's also the option to do a retainer and then a...
And then the remainder.
And then the remainder.
I'd be happy with the retainer and then, you know, the individual goal target stuff as well.
But I think we can discuss that. I mean, I think we can. I'm not concerned about how that plays out. I'm happy with paying up front. I'm happy with paying after the fact. I'm happy with a retainer and the balance. Because, I mean, I know Gary. B, he's legally obligated once we give him the money to actually do what he said he would do. And C, I agree with Richard's point that there's no way we could. I mean, we have discussed all the reasons why we believe this is not a conflict of interest to a degree that I believe satisfies any such requirement. So I think in the interest of, you know, making progress, I think I want to propose, and I don't know if this is a motion or not, but I want to propose that we solicit a specific proposal from Gary and that we vote on it via email, the terms and the work to be done, say before the end of the month of June. The vote. I realize we have rules about how the vote has to proceed.
I can have something to you by the end of the week.
I have a concern about the interaction of the voting, the technical mechanisms that would be used, and the conflict of interest policy. Namely, I don't see that there's any way that Gary doesn't get the emails of the discussion, which is like the requirement of the policy. You know what I mean? Like, he's supposed to present a thing and then leave, and we discuss, and then we vote. And how does he, quote-unquote, leave if it's, you know, the email list?
We can blind the votes by emailing directly, and then when we're done, we can mail a summary to the list. I mean, we can just put a bunch of people on the two line. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Yeah, I think as long as we have something that is equivalent to minutes, I think that would be okay. You know, some summary.
Yeah, I mean, we can make the votes public once they're collected.
Yeah.
On down with that.
We just have to. We will have to get a response from the board members who don't vote or the only concern is there. We have to make sure that every board member does weigh in so that it doesn't appear that we did it behind closed doors and hand-selected people. And getting responses from people can be a problem.
Mine would just be an abstain, I believe.
Yeah, you have to abstain.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, and then my concern would be, you know, making sure we had a quorum voting on it.
Right, so technically the responsibility would fall to me to make sure that everybody
is aware of the vote in a timely fashion.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So are we comfortable with that as a way to actually make progress and move forward?
Yep. I am.
Sounds good to me.
Yes.
Okay. So then, Gary, if you can send a proposal, I will take the responsibility once we have that proposal of opening a discussion around the proposal among the board members.
All right.
Before the end of the month.
Okay, and that's just going to the IMF board list?
Yeah, please send the proposal to the board list.
Okay. You will have it at the end of this week, honestly. There's a lot of other stuff going on where I'm trying to get stuff situated, so I'll just get that done as part of it.
Okay.
So then technically...
All right, so I think that covers the two bullets here, right, John?
Yeah, so technically for the process of the meeting, we should technically have a motion that we change this to Gary sends a proposal to the board and we deal with it in email separate from the meeting.
Do we need a motion for that? I don't think we do because we're not taking the activity yet.
Oh, fair point. Okay. So
I mean, I think the motion will come via the email once we have the proposal in hand. We're just asking him to send a proposal at this point.
Okay, yeah.
We can make a motion if somebody thinks we need to.
No, I think you're right.
So, no, I don't think so. I think Gary's going to propose something to the board list. Then Ethan's going to have a off-list discussion. That's how we manage the conflict with Gary being a director. Then somebody in that discussion will move. We'll do our email vote with a three-day notice or whatever. And we really want everyone to weigh in on this particular one because of the conflict of interest.
Yes.
Concern that Ethan...
And John will chase down anyone who doesn't reply.
Right, because that's technically my responsibility. Yeah.
Right, and then we'll follow that up with something to the board list of...
I withdraw my proposal, by the way.
Okay. Then we'll follow that up to the board list of something summarizing the discussion that was had and the record of the votes then.
Yep.
Yes. Which the official recorder of the record of the votes for this particular vote will, we have to look, it's probably not in the minutes, but it's probably Matthew. Because Gary is secretary.
Right.
Okay.
I don't think that's in our, in our documents. Somebody should look. I'll look. But ordinarily, I think if the secretary is recused, it's the vice president.
I don't think we need to worry about whether it's in the documents or not. I just think ethically, you know, it just makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, my experience has always been that the vice president sort of does any duties that other people can't do, including the president, right?
Right.
So, correct. Okay. All right. I'm happy with that if other people are happy.
Yep. Works for me. So then I guess we'll go to, is there any other new business?
I have one tiny thing. I'll send an email to the list. I forgot to send an expense for when I transferred iamfreedom.org and pidge.in over to Gandhi. It was like $30 or something. I don't remember. But I will be sending that out. That's just a heads up to all of you.
Okay. Well, if there's
that sounds like Colin's problem to me.
If there's no other new business, then I guess we'll adjourn the meeting.
I make a motion that we adjourn the meeting.
Seconded by Pete.
Okay. We have a motion and a second to end the meeting. All those in favor say aye.
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 Sounds like unanimous to me.
Hurrah!
And I will stop the recording now.